Hello guys, welcome back to the world of Aja Pearl. It's my world and I'm so happy you're here. So again, this is a continuation of chapter 2 of, well, this is part 2 of chapter 2 of Child's Book of Life. Hey, I'm a good mother. I work hard at catering at my catering business and taking care of my family. Besides, I was the breadwinner when he was just a busboy at that disgusting bar. I see you take care of yourself too, Malcolm Jr. says, leaning back with his arms folded. But I hate to break it to you, baby. It's not you. And it's not about you. And this is not a soap opera. It is about me. I'm the grieving widow and the single mother. I'm the grieving widow and single mother struggling to raise her three children by herself. You don't know any trials. You don't know my trials and tribulations I tackle every day. You're insensitive like everyone else. Here we go. Selfish, self-centered Sabine. Let me ask you something. Doesn't it get old, tired, boring? A lot of people are sick of it. Sick of what? Malcolm looked at his sister as if she spoke another language. Is this chick for real? He thinks to himself. There's a short pause until Malcolm finally says, if you have to ask, you will never know. Malcolm Jr. walks away to join Jabari and Hyacinth. What's going on between the two of you? Between you two, Hyacinth wonders. Nothing, Mama. Malcolm Jr. replies as he sits in his seat. Don't you lie in God's house, Hyacinth whispers sternly. Malcolm Jr. softly confesses, I told Sabine about the get-together and she got mad. Then she said that she and the children will be fine by themselves. I'm telling you, Mama, those children need someone, but not their mother. MJ is right, Mama. Jabari agrees. That woman makes a sinner look like a saint. You see them. Manny, Tina, and Corey look miserable. I'm going back there to get them in. Jabari, don't you dare. Hyacinth softly commands as she grabs his arm. I don't want any more drama between my two sons and my only daughter. Hyacinth continued with a sigh. Your father, God rest his soul, I tried to give all of you the best. We sent you to the best colleges. Sabine was dying to go to that St. Elizabeth of Hungary School of Culinary Studies. I was so proud of her that day when she graduated with high honors. Your sister is so brilliant and beautiful, but her heart is so small. I will always love your father. I miss him more and more every day. But when your father left this earth, he left Sabine broken. Now she walks around as if the world owes her something. Mama, you can't blame yourself for Sabine's demons, Malcolm assured his mother. Oh, I know it's not my fault. Besides, you have a point, says Hyacinth. There are Sabine's demons. And she has to deal with them. Drama is already in God's house. And she's sitting behind us, Jabari whispers. Enough. I know your sister wants to make her husband's funeral about her. Fine. We will not give the devil any satisfaction. We are dignified Catholics. Remember that. Is that clear? Yes, Mama, the two men softly said in unison. You let me handle your sister, Hyacinth says. Did you get to see Nevin's parents? Malcolm Jr. asks. I'm pretty sure they're here. I hope Mr. and Mrs. Nareed are here. They're like ghosts. The children hardly know them. I wonder what his childhood was like. It must have been pretty lonely. No. Mr. and Mrs. Nareed wasn't so thrilled when he got married. I don't think they wanted him to be married, period. I guess Nevin thought he could escape his loneliness through marriage, but his adulthood was pretty lonely too. I know that when the children were born, the children became his refuge. Then, when he started working at the bar, his loneliness was gone. Your sister didn't like that. She wanted to keep that man to himself, just like his parents. More guests attend the funeral. The clergy of Holy Chalice Church make his way to the front of the church and sits by the altar. Looking over at the open casket where Nevin lay peacefully, flowers decorate the coffin as the pictures illustrate his life. Valentine and Christopher attend without the children. It's a bittersweet service. Father McDougall leads the service with an opening prayer. Other prayers follow. Songs are sung. Christopher reads the obituary. As he reads, Christopher looks at Nevin from his blind spot. He becomes choked up for a minute, but he quickly gathers himself and continues to read. As Valentine watches her husband in the pulpit, she wonders, Sabine should be up there reading that obituary, not Chris. What a horrible wife. How could Nevin marry someone so selfish? Valentine could not hold back her tears. Then a figure wearing a navy blue pinstripe suit walks down the aisle towards Valentine. She feels a hand on her shoulder and she turns abruptly. Do you mind if I cut in? Isham Mejia asks. Isham, I'm so glad you came. Valentine replies happily. He slides inside the pew with Valentine. Where's Orchid? Did you see her? Isham asks. No, I didn't see her. I hope she shows up at the bar. We're going to need a lot of help from the party. Yeah, me too. Anyway, how are you holding up? Valentine asks. Oh, I'm sorry. Let me read that again. He slides inside the pew with Valentine. Where's Orchid? Did you see her? Isham asks. No, I didn't see her. I hope she shows up, Isham replies. We're going to need a lot of help at the party from. We're going to need a lot of help for the party. Yeah, me too. How are you holding up? Valentine asks. Okay. It hasn't been easy losing your best friend to a bottle. I feel sorry for Nevin, Valentine whispers. All his life, he lived in torment by people who theoretically loved him. His parents, his relatives, his wife. You know, Val, Nevin had a gift that made him happy. And he wanted to share that happiness with the world, Isham started. The people who shunned him didn't matter. And even as they sit in his church, they still don't matter. However, the people who loved him matter a great deal. Plus, he did have a family who loved him. Besides his children, we were his family. The Rainbow District was his family. And many others who came to pay their respects were his family. Valentine pats her eyes dry and smiles. Maybe you should go up there and say a few words to everyone else, she suggests. I agree to come to my buddy's funeral. Saying a few kind words would be pushing it. Funerals creep me out. You're right, Ish. Nevin did not die in vain. He made his mark in the world, and now God has called him home. Hey, are you coming to help Chris with me with the party later? Of course. Meanwhile, Sabine gazes at the casket. She had a look of anguish. Her heart is breaking. Why couldn't you love me, Nevin? She thinks to herself. You loved everyone else but me. I was your wife. I was the mother of your children. You left me all alone to be with your damn gay lover. Sabine's lips become tighter as she tried to fight her tears. I hope the two of you live happily ever after in hell, she thinks to herself. Other people who are the closest to Nevin speaks on Nevin's behalf as well. During the procession, volunteers gingerly carry the casket into the hearse. Close friends and family go to their vehicles to meet in the burial site. Others, like Mr. and Mrs. Newkirk and Isha Mejia, leave after the funeral. They have to finish putting on finishing touches for their party. Mrs. Montague, you have my condolences, expresses Christopher. Thank you, dear. Nevin was like another son to me, Hyacinth replies with a heavy heart. He was like a family to us as well. He touched all of our hearts. Did you speak to Sabine? Yes, ma'am. I spoke to her the other night, but when I spoke to her, well, I understand. Sabine is going through a lot now. It's best we leave her alone. It would have been nice if she attended our party. Party? What party? The gang and I are throwing a party to pay tribute to Nevin. Sounds wonderful. I hope it goes well. Thanks, Mrs. Montague. The drive to the cemetery seems like an eternity. The sky is clear and blue, while the sun gives off in its eternal glow. The cars finally arrive at the burial site. Everyone gathers under the tent to say their last goodbyes, while the song El Shaddai plays in the background. As they lower Nevin into the ground, some people softly weep. But one person who should have displayed the most emotion showed little emotion, Sabine. She sits stone-faced, watching the body of her late husband descend into the ground. Sabine then rises from her seat and quickly grabs the children. They all dart into the limo until the mother stops them in their tracks. Sabine is annoyed. Hello, baby girl, greets Hyacinth. What's your hurry? Sabine takes a deep breath. No hurry, Mama, says Sabine. The burial is over and we're going home. I would like to take the children with me for a while. Why? Sabine asks sternly. No need to be so offensive. No one's trying to take your babies. I just want to spend time with them. Perhaps a week. A week? Oh, no. I don't think so. What about school, Mama? I need to take them to school. One of your brothers or I will take the triplets to school. It's no problem. They're my grandbabies. You know I'll take good care of them. Yeah. Like you did with me? Hyacinth looks at her daughter and shakes her head. Your brothers told me you were going through. We're going through this. We're going to do this. Hyacinth says, "Do what, Mama?" Sabine asks. "Make Nevin's funeral about you." Mama, look. Everyone is so damn focused on Nevin like he's a god or some saint. I'm the grieving widow. What about me? Nobody stopped to think about how this was affecting me. Just when Hyacinth was about to put Sabine in her place, she looks at the situation from a different angle. Her daughter has lost her husband. She remembers feeling hurt and alone when her late husband Malcolm Sr. passed away. Plus, Hyacinth does not want to embarrass her daughter in front of her children. So Hyacinth has to stop herself and take a breath. Hyacinth calmly replies, "You're right. You are the grieving widow. I also know that is a traumatic moment for you, and you are not okay. But if you want to be alone, I will take the children." Sabine is bewildered. She cannot believe that her mother made the statement to her. It is so gentle, understanding, and pathetic, like a mother. Sabine gives it some thought that maybe she does need to get some time to grieve. "Okay, fine. The triplets can go with you," Sabine surrenders. "Good." Hyacinth turns her attention to the children and says, "Okay, who wants to go to Nana's house?" "Me!" the triplets shout while jumping up and down. "Okay, babies," replied Hyacinth. "Run along with your uncles." "They need a change of clothes," says Sabine. "Either Jabari or MJ will get their bare necessities. Now go on and take care of yourself." Sabine walks to the car. Before stepping inside, Sabine turns around and sees her children are hovering around Hyacinth. She then goes into the car with a heavy heart, and the chauffeur drives her home. Christopher, Isham, Valentine, and the busboy, Johan Howard, are throwing their celebration at Newkirk's in Nevin's memory. Christopher is putting the finishing touches. Balloons and streamers decorate the bar. Suddenly, the regulars and the patrons come pouring into the bar. Some of the regulars, who also attended the funeral, invite their friends. They are amazed over the scenery of Newkirk's. "Hey, what's going on here?" one of the patrons asked Johan. "Nevin passed away," Johan says to the patron. "He was a busboy before me." "Oh, man, my condolences." "Thanks, man. I wish I knew Nevin personally. He seems like an awesome dude." "Yeah, he was. Anyway, instead of grieving, we're going to celebrate. It's kind of like a going away party. Johan cheered. "I don't get it, but whatever. A party's a party. All right, I'll pour you a beer." Suddenly, Orchid rushes into the bar, thinking she was late for work.
Hey,
where you been, Mama?" Isham asks. I had to run a few errands. I'm sorry," Orchid replies. "That's fine with me, but you have to answer to the boss and the boss lady. They've been wondering where you were."
"Well, where are they?"
"I don't know. I don't know where Chris is, but Val's over there cleaning tables."
"Okay, thank you."
Orchid rushes to Valentine's table. Unfortunately, she runs so fast she bumps into Valentine.
"I'm so sorry," Orchid apologizes. "I didn't mean to be late."
"You should be more careful. This isn't a drag race. Where were you?"
"The trains were late. I'm sorry."
Fine. "You're here, so that's all that matters. Grab an apron and start taking orders."
"Yes, ma'am."
Orchid rushes off to get ready for her shift. Valentine watches the young woman rush like a bat out of hell. "I hope she doesn't get into any more accidents," Valentine thinks to herself, shaking her head. Valentine thinks, then continues cleaning the bar tables until a voice called to her. "Hello, Queen of Hearts." A voice calls to her. She stops and turns to see a regular and a good friend.
"Hugh? I'm so glad you're here," Valentine exclaims with an embrace.
"Likewise, my love. How are you doing?"
"Well, you know."
"Yeah, I closed the boutique for the day. I cannot be my sunny self for my public, so I put a wreath on the flower, on a wreath of flowers on the door, so people know there's been a passing. However, we're all living one day at a time. Get it? Oh. They both laugh. Hugh began to cry. Hugh Bruckner was a regular patron of Newkirk's and a resident of the Rainbow Quarter. He is also a proprietor of an establishment called the Betty Bot Boutique. Oh, Hugh, don't cry. No, I'm fine. Hugh reassures Valentine as he dries his eye with his handkerchief with a gentle pat. It's okay to cry. We're all hurting by this loss. That's why the gang and I are throwing a party. Hugh stops patting his eyes and look at her strangely. I don't get it, he says through his eyes. Instead of lingering on the loss, we are celebrating Nevin's life and work. Oh, now I get it. That's a wonderful idea. But he was just a busboy. Well, Nevin was more than just a busboy. What do you mean? I don't understand. Valentine motions Hugh to come closer. She whispers, Nevin was a lounge singer named Vanilla Coco Bean. Vanilla Coco Bean. Oh, I remember. Remember? Don't tell me Chris told you too. Oh, no, dear. Sunset told me. Sunset? You know, my husband mentioned a sunset the other night. Who is Sunset? The question is, who was Sunset? Was? Yes, Sunset was my best friend. Well, Sunset was my best friend. Well, he was my best friend. She was born male, but she wanted to be considered female. Anyway, she was like a sister to me, who I believe died for love. Love? Honey, you're starting to sound like a parrot. Oh, sorry. They both laugh. That's quite all right, but seriously, Sunset was a Nubian, smooth, dark chocolate brown skin. Full luscious lips and a fit, lean figure. To the untrained eye, she could pass for a woman. So, transgender? Yes. Sunset was transgender. Oh, I see. Sunset and I would come to see Nevin perform practically every night. I tell you, that man had a voice that would place envy on the nightingales. Of course, Sunset was a bigger fan than I. So, how did she die for love? Sunset died under the knife, trying to undergo a sex change for a man who did not love her. Oh my goodness, that's terrible. Poor Sunset. How did she discover Nevin and Vanilla Coco Bean were the same people? Well, one night, dreaming sweet dreams, my doorbell rang. All right, I'm coming, I called out, struggling to put on my bathrobe. I mumbled to myself, just when the king of the jungle was about to rip the loincloth off of me. I turned the hallway light to unlock the door, and Sunset came barging into my apartment. She was in tears. And her mascara running down her face, she was such a mess. She looked like a mess. I cannot believe it. I'm such an idiot, she cried. Sunset, do you have any idea what time it is? I have to open the boutique early in the morning. I'm sorry, darling, but
I still cannot believe it. I'm in shock. About what? Vanilla Coco. The singer? What about her? Not her. Him. What? Okay, what about him? He's not gay. That had got my attention. Oh. Wow, that woke me up, I said with wide eyes. Have a seat and tell me about it. And have a seat and tell me all about it. Well, remember when we all left for the bar? Remember we all left the bar? Yeah. Well, Vanilla Coco and I went back to my place for a little nightcap. I could tell he was totally into me. Plus, we were both somewhat intoxicated. Anyway, we were having a good time laughing and joking. Okay, so what happened? We were sitting on the couch. I sat sideways facing Nevin. He was so gorgeous. I poured my heart and soul to him. I told him that I admire him and that he was blessed with a wonderful gift for being a sultry songstress. He was very flattered. Then what? I kissed Nevin. It was the most magical 5 seconds of my life. You kissed him? Yes. She said as she begins to cry again. Where? On the lips? Sunset nodded her head. Hugh let out a huge gasp. How do you react to that kiss? Well, after 5 seconds of locking lips with me, he had realized he was locking lips with me. Was he shocked that he was kissing a woman or kissing a man? I don't know, darling. So he pushed me away and he shook his head. He was shocked and he seemed very uncomfortable. Vanilla Coco leaped off the couch and darted to the door. I tried to apologize for being so forward, but he was too upset. I begged him to stay until Nevin told me he had to go home to his wife and children. Oh, no. He said that he was sorry that he misled me, even though I kept apologizing for my behavior. So I let him go. After he left, I cried. So what do you want me to do? I mean, don't get me wrong. My heart goes out to you, and it's very devastating news. But sweetheart, if it wasn't meant to be, it wasn't meant to be. Sunset looked at me and said, "This is the reason I came to you. You're my voice of reason. Glad to be of service? Hugh, you are right. I should be ashamed of myself behaving this way. It's not like he is the last man on earth. Besides, there'll be other men. Many, many men. Yes, dear. Many gay men who would date a transgender woman. Darling, you're the only one I know who can talk to me off the ledge of the building, and you did it. Okay? That's good. Are you sure you're okay or going to be okay? Yeah, I think so. Good. Well, you can camp on my couch for the night. I would hate for you to wander around these horrible streets. Thank you so much. Remember, I had to open the boutique, so when I leave, you leave. I'm fine with that. Good. Now, if you excuse me, I'm going back to my gladiator dream. Good night. Good night, dear. I thought it was the end of it. Hugh continues. Apparently, I didn't talk Miss Sunset off the ledge after all. A few weeks later, she came into my boutique beaming from here to Mars. Hugh Bruckner. I have wonderful news, Sunset announced.
Oh, do tell, I urge.
Vanilla Coco and I are Vanilla Coco and I made up and we are friends.
Friends? You and Vanilla Coco are friends?
Yeah.
Oh, okay.
I'm so glad he's not mad at me anymore. He's willing to let past pass. Besides, I miss coming to see his performances. His singing is like food to my soul, and my soul is starving.
Okay.
But you do know. Yeah. Nevin's not gay. I know. But that doesn't mean we can't be friends or have to stop being his fan. I want you to be careful.
Careful of what?
Letting your emotions run away with you.
Darling,
you worry too much.
I worry because you are my friend and I love you.
And I love you too for that, Hugh. But you have nothing, obviously nothing to worry about.
I'm fine.
This was not good, Hugh continues. I was beginning to worry about my dear friend. I feared the worst. She was thrilled that she and Nevin were friends, but her behavior appeared to be like someone was getting married. I didn't want to be a nag, so I kept a close eye on her. Whenever she wanted to go to the performance, I accompanied Sunset. So one night of one of his performances, I went to speak to the siren myself. Miss Bean was taking five at the bar, so I saw my chance to have a little chat with her. Vanilla Coco?
Yes.
Allow me to introduce myself. My name is Hugh Bruckner.
Hi, Hugh Bruckner.
Please call me Hugh.
Okay, Hugh. Can I help you with something?
Yes. I need some clarity on something.
What's that? Sunset.
Oh, look, what happened? If you happen to be her boyfriend.
No.
It's not that. And with much respect, he refers to be considered a she.
Sorry.
Anyway, Sunset and I are just friends and nothing much.
Oh, I'm very much aware of that. It's just that, well, she somehow sees your friendship with her going to a higher level.
Oh, no. I straightened this whole thing with her. I thought I made it perfectly clear. We can only be just friends.
Well, please let her know. I would greatly appreciate that. Anyway,
I wish the subject matter was a little more pleasant, but I wish the subject matter was a little bit more pleasant, but it was a pleasure chatting with you.
Likewise.
Then we parted.
Sunset was in awe by Nevin. Hugh says, she thought she was watching the demigoddess weaving her enchanted rhapsody on stage.
Hugh sighs and continues, then she comes up with this ridiculous idea. She's been playing with this idea for a while and is going through the procedure to be a woman.
Don't get me wrong. I support my friend.
But I believe she did it for the wrong reason. Unfortunately, it became her demise. We were having dinner at the Bedford Bistro.
So, how have you been these days? I asked.
Oh, you know, pretty well,
suggests reply. Sunset replied, are you and Vanilla still friends?
Nevin.
Vanilla Cocoa Bean's name is Nevin. I stop eating and pause.
The bus boy?
I ask.
Yes.
Are you telling me that mild-mannered bus boy is a flamboyant songbird?
Oh, yeah, but please.
He swore me to secrecy. No one must know of Nevin's real identity.
Oh, sure, love.
I'll take it to my grave.
I still can't believe it.
Anyway, Nevin and I are good friends. I value our friendship.
I sense a but. A big but.
Well, I figured that the reason I can only be friends with Nevin is the fact that he's straight like a number two pencil. We went over the sunset and I'm not fully a woman. I looked at her very cross.
What is going on in that little head of yours? I inquired.
I'm going to do it. Thanks to him.
Are you going to undergo sex change?
Yes. I've been playing with this idea anyway. And, well, Nevin is that little push I need to make it official.
I knew it.
What?
You are letting your emotions run away with you.
Did you tell Nevin?
No.
Sunset. I did not want to say anything, but please, please don't undergo this procedure for a man that doesn't love you.
I'm not. I'm doing this for me.
I always felt like a gorgeous woman trapped in a somewhat sexy man's body, but after the surgery, I won't have to feel that way anymore. And who knows, maybe something more will happen between Nevin and me.
Well, Sonny, you're a big girl, and you have made your decision. You have my blessing and my support. Would you mind if I accompany you when you go through your procedure?
I would love that, Sunset said as she took my hand.
So I went to Sunset to the hospital for a procedure. I waited for hours and hours in that waiting room, and she didn't make it.
Oh no!
The doctors told me that she lost so much blood during the procedure, I tried to hold it together, but I couldn't. I bawled like a baby. Hugh forces himself to laugh to stop himself from crying.
Look at me, Hugh says, patting his eyes with his handkerchief. I'm still bawling like a baby.
Hugh, if you want to cry, cry, Valentine replies. Today is a bittersweet day for everyone.
She's been gone for a while.
You would think that I would be over this by now. Anyway, I had help from our other friends to make the funeral arrangements since her relatives made her an outcast. We were all not allowed to have a proper service for the church, so we gave the beautiful Sunset a beautiful funeral at the funeral parlor, but the casket had to be closed.
I'm sure Sunset would have been honored.
Honored. The heartless bastards would have never allowed us to have a service there if we did not agree not to have an open casket service.
No one had the chance to see Sunset's beautiful face.
I'm so sorry, Hugh.
I'm so sorry, Hugh, Valentine says unapologetically. Why didn't you come to christen me?
I didn't want to make a big scene. Nonsense. You are family.
Valentine, you are truly a sweetheart, but but I was able to sue that hospital for malpractice. Did you win the case? The case is still pending. I know it has something to do with, well, our lifestyle. I did not want my dear friend to end up in a potter's field with an unmarked grave. She deserved better than that. So I paid out of pocket for a funeral. That's terrible. The hospital is the one who was negligent. I know. However, there is still this horrible stigma towards homosexuals. We are considered sinful, strange, unwholesome. Plus, to make matters worse, society thinks and anyone who is gay automatically has AIDS. Even though many of us are dying from this deadly virus, it doesn't mean it's our punishment. If you do win, what do you plan on doing with the settlement? Well, I would like to put together a safe house for gays, lesbians, bisexuals, and transgenders. I figure Sunny would have wanted it that way. Even though being attracted to your own gender is no longer considered a mental disease, society's still not ready to view it as an equal. You, Sunset was blessed to have a friend like you. You are truly a saint. How many people attended the service? A good number, Hugh says. Her family wasn't there, but she had other loved ones there. Nevin must have eventually found out about Sunset after the procedure, because the next thing I know, Nevin is giving a farewell performance. Valentine says, yes, we were all dumbfounded. Do you think Nevin blamed himself for Sunset's death? I don't know. No one knows what was troubling Nevin. Maybe there are so many things, but I do know that his wife made his life a living hell. Well, dear, Nevin is no longer in pain. It's getting late, and the party is finally coming to a close. The patrons leave the neighborhood bar, Newkirk's, little by little. While the staff does the part of cleaning and closing the bar, Christopher urgently needs to talk to Eshawn. Hey, Eshawn. Christopher starts. Hey, Chris. Awesome turnout, wasn't it? Yeah, great turnout. We need to talk. Talk? Chris, I know exactly what you're feeling. I lost my best friend too, but we'll get through this. I'm sure. I'm here for you, man. Are you sure? Of course. Why would you ask me such a question? I ask because, well, you've been acting strangely for a while, and you've been coming into work late, and I haven't been coming at all. Is everything okay? Eshawn laughs. Yeah, man. Look, I took this thing hard too. No, this has been happening since Nevin was still performing at the bar. Chris, I'm fine. I was going through some personal problems, but everything is great now.
They are still going on with you. It hasn't been resolved. Look, man, I don't want to act like your mom. Then don't. I told you, I'm fine. Eshawn resumes cleaning the bar. Christopher can tell by his behavior that Eshawn is not okay. However, he leaves the issue alone because Eshawn is getting irritable. Okay, I guess you are fine. I'll let you finish cleaning.
Well, that concludes chapter 2. Okay, well, that concludes part 2 of chapter 2. I hope you enjoying this reading, even though I've been stumbling on the words a little bit, but sorry about that. Anyway, please tune in to the other recordings I've done, introduction and chapter 1 and chapter 2, if you haven't already, and be on the lookout for chapter 3. This is Aja Pearl, signing off from the world of Aja Pearl. It's my world, and I'm so happy you've been here. I'm so happy to have you here. Have a good night.